Life of the Press.
Hot, hot news.
Good and bad.
Follow us, subscribe.
That's the only way you're going to see it.
No, Life of the Press.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to F of the Press. You have myself and the King in the North, Nick Stothard. I don't know why he's wearing a jacket like he's outside in the cold room or something.
Hey, I just came back from work there. It was freezing, man. It was freezing out on the field there. Yeah, now I'm just trying to defrost a little bit.
No, but I think your biggest problem is the fact that at RC de Villiers, it can get really freezing, especially,
yeah.
I don't know, which field were you practicing on?
So we actually now, at the moment, we're right at the bottom fields and that's right by the river, our main fields are being, sort of serviced at the moment, getting ready for the summer. So, yeah, so we're there in the doldrums there, suffering. Right.
And your fixtures have now been confirmed, which is probably good for you guys.
Yeah, so working with the Amatux team, it's quite nice.
Have now been confirmed.
Yeah,
Who's that guy?
I think our administrator's jumping in here. I don't know what he's doing. Hey, you've had your time to shine, man. Come on.
Exactly.
But yeah, we are preparing now for the 21st, the weekend of the 21st. We play against JDR away.
Yeah.
So that'll be quite nice. The group's looking quite strong. We haven't lost in preseason yet. We've managed to beat JDR. We've played them in a friendly. We managed to draw with Pretoria Kellys. We beat SuperSport United, their first team, 2-0. We've beaten my varsity team.
Were you coaching on which side?
I was coaching my varsity team. So yeah, I ended up having to go back with the youngsters, which is good. It was a good test for us. And then obviously we had a friendly this last weekend. I wasn't there. We played the new team from the Northwest, Platinum City Rovers.
Yes, Platinum City, yeah.
We managed to beat them 3-2. So it's been good. So we'll see. We've got a nice preseason tournament this weekend, actually, involving one PSL team and six other NFD teams, or Glad Africa teams. So yeah, we played at Makalung Stadium and Giant Stadium respectively, and then the final will be on Sunday. So we'll see how we do there.
So you're playing Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday. So it will be quite nice to just let the. It's a good opportunity. Obviously, we want to win, but it's a good opportunity to give everyone a run and sort of prepare for the start of the season. So it will
Didn't
be
you guys
quite
like
nice.
Sign 10 players?
Yeah. So we signed.
I saw a loose image, I saw a post on social media that said 10 or 11 players, and
yeah, so we haven't spent
like a solid lineup.
Yeah, we haven't spent money on them. So we did a good, and I think it's good, a good clean out of the actual squad.
Yeah.
From last season, we've spoken off air and on air about certain individuals within the squad, obviously high profile players, but the high profile players don't always, sort of bring the right sort of mentality, attitude towards what the club is trying to do. So we've sort of looked in the market and found players that we think will fit in the system that we want to play this year. And I think we're on the right track. We've got the right people around us. We've got Sammy Trouton who's come in, who's a promotion specialist. He's got teams promoted to the PSL, teams promoted to the NFD or Glad Africa. So he knows exactly what's required. So he's guiding us and helping us, which is very cool. So yeah, we'll see. What's quite nice to see as well is, one of my captain actually got signed. So he's a first team player now full time.
Nice.
And then I've got one or two others training with the first team at the moment. So we'll see. But I think our big focus now is the Varsity Cup, which is in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
We're hosting it. So we're going to be playing at RC de Villiers. And yeah,
hosting the rugby and hosting the soccer. You guys have a monopoly there, hey?
No, we do. I think a lot of institutions are a bit upset that we're hosting the next big one. I think Stellenbosch are hosting the netball, but the thing is, you need the facilities to be able to host a bubble and to be able to host eight teams at once. So I think that's sort of the reality. And I think, you know, it's in terms of who can do it, I don't think there's a question of who the right institution is. And we've got two hotels, we've got 11 football fields. We've got a stadium. We've got everything on campus. So why would you why would you go to a place? You have to go find a hotel outside. Guys have to stay in a hotel setting. I mean, Wits wanted to host it. Wits, you go stay in Bromfontein. When you go outside for air, you have to put your head out the window. At least at Tux, you can go walk around the campus. It's a huge campus. You know, everyone stays on the campus. It's more conducive in that sense, in my opinion.
No, definitely.
It will be quite nice. We've got TUT first game, Pretoria Derby. Always fireworks when you play them. So we play them on the 9th of September. So you catch it live in Supersport. You'll see me there.
No, that's pretty cool. No, that's pretty cool, man.
I won't be on the show then, boys, actually. Well, Selo, is watching. I won't be on the show on the 9th.
Because you'll be in the bubble.
I'll be in the bubble when I'm not playing. But I know Thursday night, that's a Thursday the 9th. Okay. I'll be in the thick of it. So you guys can maybe make a segment there for Varsity Football for that evening.
We'll definitely have to do it. We have to support you. You know what I mean? And hopefully the fans can be back soon. I think obviously it's still a bit far away for any fans to be allowed into any stadiums. And then eventually I think amateur football also have fans and so on.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to say before we can continue, just for everyone who's tuning in tonight, I know obviously, we said that we're going to have a guest on the show tonight. Our guest is just having some technical issues. So the guest will be on the show as soon as he sorts out these technical issues, and then we'll touch on the matters that we've obviously put in the agenda. But for now, we're still chatting obviously all things Glad Africa Championship and Varsity Cup, where Nick is trying to continue the run of Tux dominance in the Varsity Cup. So if you don't win Varsity Cup, does it mean that you're fired?
Well. I hope not. My mandate, it's quite funny. My direct boss, and the CEO of Amatux actually, you know, sort of said to me, there's no pressure for you. Just find yourself in a top four. So, you know, get yourself into a semi-final and then you've sort of done your job. But now sort of the conversation has sort of changed because now rugby's won. Tux rugby won. So he sort of in not so many words said there is pressure on us to do well. So, you know, with the Olympics also happening, another Tux swimmer, Tatiana Schoenmaker got the gold.
Yes.
You know, Akani Simbini nearly won the bronze. You know, there's pressure. It's a university with pressure. Which is good. I think it's a good pressure to have. And I think it also just sets the precedent for the players within my squad to sort of understand, you know, we had an institution that doesn't want to just be, competitors. They want to be, players and teams that are going to compete to win, not just participants. Sorry, that was the word I was looking for. So yeah, I think, We set for a good tournament. I just actually got bad news on Monday. I've lost one of my centre backs who's actually taken an option to go study in America.
Oh,
which
wow.
I thought was rather selfish to lead us along this far and drop us with 3-4 weeks to go. But you know, I can't be crying over one player. You know, I've got a squad of 25 players who are all raring to go, and you know, it's just an opportunity for someone to put their hand up. And yeah, I think it's going to be nice. It's going to be surreal playing with no fans. It's going to be different. But maybe the pressure will be off the players then, you know. But, you know, then the level of intensity needs to be sort of raised from that point of view because, you know, we need to show up. You know, it's going to be live on Supersport. All the games, I think, we've got 6 out of our 7 group games on TV. So there's no place to hide. There's no place to hide for everyone. But I think it's quite nice. You know, we're talking about this and, you know, I think we're talking a lot about our youth players and current players within, you know, current youth or players playing abroad and how our youth setup is set up here in South Africa. And, you know, varsity football was put in place to bridge the gap between, you know, players that are not really good enough just yet, leaving the academy setups to go into a professional team. So I think this bridges the gap. You know, there's a lot of players that have played in the varsity football tournaments that are playing professionally. You know, from the time Claudio and I played, there was, you know, the first big one was Thabo Manyemane. He came from Northwest and we actually signed him. Amatuk signed him. But there's actually so many more that I don't even, that I'm discovering now that I used to play against, guys that I've coached against and they're currently playing in the Pro League. So, you know, it would be very sort of naive to say that it's just a youth tournament or a university tournament. Or, you know, if you're a proper coach, you know, if you're a coach that really takes his craft seriously, you will take note of this, because this is, you know, if you might find a gem here that costs absolutely nothing, and you can potentially sell him for lots of money in the future. So I think it will be quite nice to see from this batch of 2021, from all the teams, you know, there might be one or two that go on to bigger and better things.
No, that's cool. That's pretty cool. So in the competition this year, did some universities fall into a different stream or a varsity shield? Yes.
No, so what they, how it works, they used to have a tournament, well, they have a tournament called the University National Tournament, National Championships. I think it's called USA. It's called USA, but I don't know what it stands for, actually. That's actually bad from my part. But USA used to be the Varsity Cup of Football, but it would happen once a year at the end of the year, and that would be your tournament. But what Varsity Cup obviously came in and said, here's all the glitz and the glam and the money. How do we pick these 8 teams? So how it was determined to not lose the sort of use of the USA tournament, they decided to go with a qualification process. So if you play in the USA competition, you got to finish in the top 8 out of, I think it's 32 or 24 teams. So every year you have to qualify. And Tux is the only team to have played in every single varsity tournament since 2013. So every year there's normally one or two teams that drop out. TUT never qualified the 1 year. I think UJ got to the final against us in 2014, didn't qualify because they didn't, you know, back then you would actually have to qualify through your province to get to the USA Nationals. So they actually didn't put any effort into their local campaign while varsity football was happening, only focusing on them getting to the final of Varsity Cup. But it meant nothing because they ended up losing the final and they hadn't qualified for USA, which meant they couldn't qualify for Varsity Cup. So you know, there is purpose in it, and it gives the sort of underdog a chance, you know, similar to the leagues that we watch, you know, the playoff system. You know, you might find a team that finishes sixth in the championship that gets an opportunity to come up to the big leagues. You know, this gives a, you know, there's a varsity college that's part of the Varsity Cup treaty.
Oh, wow.
There's Monash, part of the Varsity Cup treaty. You know, like UCT used to be one of the teams. They haven't qualified for the last 3, 4, 5 years. So it's quite interesting to see that Tux is the sort of constant in the conversation. And I think rightly so, they have the most titles. They've got 3 titles to their name. So hopefully we can keep it up this year and make it 4.
There's a question there from Pums in terms of how the level of Tux development compared to other clubs in South Africa.
So Pums, you know, Pums I've known for quite a while. I think he was involved at Tux Hockey. He actually coached one of the teams there for quite a while. And I think he'll understand the environment as to what Tux is. And, you know, they are a business as well as being a sort of avenue to enhance your talent and to play at a high level. But, you know, they make sure the books balance at the end. And I think they make a bit more on that, on the other side of the book. So I think from that end, we struggle to get the best talent. Okay. So, You know, I've been quoted in the past, I was quoted live on TV saying that we don't have the best resources, or we don't have enough resources as in comparison to a Sundowns, a Chiefs and a Pirates. And I got called into a meeting and I got absolutely blasted from left to right. It was terrible. So let me take you down this path. Tucks have the best facilities, the best resources. Not all of those resources are accessible. So, for example, our school, our players go into a school. That school is a very expensive school.
The Tucks High School.
So I won't mention how expensive it is, but it's in the regions of your very expensive schools in South Africa.
Private schools.
But what you get for that is you get your hostel, you get your food, and you get to play the sport that you love, and you ideally get the best coaching, because the clubs that form part of the school have the best coaches, you would think. I can vouch for Tucks football. They've got very good coaches. But we know football in South Africa is a very it's played by majority of people that don't have the funds to go to a school like that. Yeah. So where we select players, and Jason, who's one of our members on Goal Lounge, he, or constant viewers, he's the academy manager, and he's done a great job in the last, I'd say, 6 to 8 years in recruiting the best fit player that can fit into our system. So a player who can afford first and foremost, and then a player that can potentially improve and has room for growth. So what I can tell you is I've been in the academy for the last couple of years. We have done exceptionally well in comparison to what we can actually bring in. So we've beaten Chiefs, we've beaten Pirates, we've beaten Sundowns, we've beaten Wits when Wits had their good academy, we've beaten Supersport, we've been to finals of tournaments, we've been semi-finals of tournaments, in the past, before those 4 years that I was coaching and Jason was molding, we weren't even qualifying for these tournaments, or we weren't even getting out of the groups. So we at Tucks are looking to develop players based firstly on their physical attributes. So if they are physically strong enough, we say, okay, we've got an athlete first and foremost. Let's try and give him the tools. And if we can give him those tools, we've seen now in the last, I think Tucks have signed now 4 or 5 players from our youth academy system, which is very good. And that's testament to what Jason's done. And I think we've had to, instead of like a Sundowns, they go and they say, we're going to KZN and we're going to sign a left back, a striker and a central midfielder, and we're going to hold open trials and pick the best out of that. We can't do that. We have to literally flip it on its head and do it the other way around, which is not entirely, it's not the wrong way to do it, because it's the only way we can do it. And we've managed to get success with that.
Yeah. We've developed a few pros with that
system in the last 4 years. I think Jason on his book, I think MDC and PSL/NFD, I think we are on about 30 plus players that are playing somewhere in the system. So that's decent.
No, that's pretty good. Because if I'm thinking about now the system that you are employing, I remember, like back in the day, to join a Tucks Academy, you had to pay a certain fee to join the academy and so on. You know what I mean? I think, and that sometimes it's not discouraged, but it kind of did discourage certain players because they couldn't afford to pay the fees at Tucks. You know what I mean? And then, for instance, then they still have to pay a cost of getting to a Tucks. From, let's say, they come from Soshanguve, for instance. Now they have to pay, I don't know how much they have to pay to get
100 rand taxi fee there and back. Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and then it's at late at night, so now you have to get a special transport and so on. So I remember it was quite tough. And I remember, I think Tucks did in some instances, they did try and organize transport for these people to almost partner up and say, oh, we'll pay for your transport to go there. Yeah. I remember like an Obringoma, for instance, they used to pay for their transport to go to Hammanskraal. So it was him and other guys from Hammanskraal from like the age of 10 up to the and the 17-year-olds, yeah, where they organize a transport for them to go to thing. Let me see.
I don't think he's physically on yet.
Okay, let me just. Okay, let me wait.
Just for, remove him for now. But I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, it is. So let me paint you a picture of how it's done in America. America have amateur football.
Okay, there, there is.
So, yeah, there he is there.
Hey, Prince, how's it, man?
Hey, good evening, guys. I'm good. Thanks, how are you?
All good, all good. Is your network okay now? No worries, man.
Yeah, the network is fine, man. The Wi-Fi just switched off, I guess. So I had to call the service provider and stuff. So, yeah, I guess it's fine now.
No worries, man. We're all good. No, I was just chatting to Nick now and asking him about the development because I don't know if last time we did. Maybe he wasn't there on the show the last time because Nick is involved with Tux University football, and he's the head coach of the Varsity Cup team and the assistant coach of the NFD team. So I was asking him in terms of, like, you know, the development of Tux. Sometimes he was telling us about the system that they utilize in order to attract players and so on, and he was just going into comparing to the American system.
Yeah, so I mean, if you, like, I think Prince, and it's something I was going to get onto, and I'm happy you're here because I'd love your views on it. But if you look at, so we are a commercial program. Our youth product is a commercial program completely. So we can get money in, pay salaries, and essentially we provide a service to the kids. In America, the youth system is done exactly the same up until you get to a specific age where you enter the MLS, Youth Premier League, and then there's generally a grant for those players to play. But from what I understand, those kids are paying in excess, if you convert it, in like 15,000 to 20,000 rand a year to play football. Okay, so obviously that model wouldn't work here. However, it is working at Tux. We've got the most members. We've got the biggest football club in South Africa in terms of members. So if you look at, I think we've got close to 600-700 football players in our club, which is huge. If you want to compare it to, you know, obviously you've got your Chiefs, your Sundowns, your Pirates, who are the biggest clubs. But in terms of actual personnel, we've got the biggest, and it's working for us. But my question is, you know, we get a grant of 600,000 rand a month. I think that's how much the NFD is. Prince, you might correct me if I'm wrong. But if you look at your PSLs are getting in excess of 2.5 million rand a month to run their clubs, not one of those clubs are accountable as to if any or a portion of that money is going towards their youth system. Because we can attract those players, Cello, I was telling you, and our kids are paying that hefty fee to stay in our school and pay, and we're still competing with those teams. Why are they not selecting the best of the best and creating a youth system right up from the age of 6 all the way up until 19, and they're funding it? Because the Sundowns can do it. Why do you think Sundowns came and asked us to partner with them? Because we're already doing it, so it's easy for them. I think so. You look at a Chiefs and a Pirates. I think they speak about a revamp every year, every couple of years. There's a revamp at the Chiefs academy. They're hiring, firing, getting rid of players. But there's no excuse, in my opinion, for those big clubs to not have the best youth systems here in South Africa. And it actually frustrates me because, Prince, I read your tweets every day. There's so much talent here. But where are they? Where are they? And you've got your big players in the market only worrying about their big stars that are coming out and the players they're buying from overseas in Africa and South America, where, you know, we could be developing these guys and we have a proper 10-year plan where our 10-year-olds now should be playing in the PSL at least or abroad. And Prince will speak about the broad part. So, yeah, it frustrates me a little bit, Prince. Sorry, I'm a little bit emotional.
No worries. But Prince, what do you think in terms of the South African youth setup and where it is currently? And you know, I think if we all think about you know, where we've come from. We've come from a time where in the past there was a lot of age cheating. Obviously, I think now there's less of that, but there is still age cheating. So what do you think, you know, how our youth setup can be obviously nurtured and how it can be moved forward for our youth teams then, the South African youth teams, to also improve and then to obviously go into Bafana Bafana and so on?
Man, you know, this topic is it's very frustrating, you know, if we are to be, you know, to be blunt about it, because I think the biggest problem that we have in South Africa is that we are refusing to evolve. We are refusing to you know, move with the times. We're always looking for shortcuts in terms of our development. Why I'm saying this? I'm saying this because, you know, if you look at most clubs, of course, you'll have your Sundowns and the Kaizer Chiefs and your Pirates and many other clubs, Super Sport, that have players that are in their development. But if you look at when do they scout the players, how do they scout the players, what kind of players are they looking for? You find that mostly most teams, they scout players from the age of 12, age of 13, which is a bit late if you look. If you compare to the rest of the most advanced countries in terms of development, I mean, you'd have a situation of Ansu Fati that has been at Barcelona since the age of 5. I mean, there are so many cases that we don't have to repeat. You know, I think that's the first problem that we're facing, that we scout our players at a very, you know, when they're old. And number two, when you scout them when they're old, it's like when you skip grade 1, 2, and 3, and then you are scouted when you must go and enter at grade 4. Then it means you have missed the basics. Yeah, now you must then catch up for 5 years. You must your development must be fast tracked. Therefore, meaning that you won't get the basics right. I mean, we've seen it. Or even those that are scouted at 12, I don't think they go through the right development stages. I don't think they go through the right basic for a child, the right basics of development. That's why I find players, you know, at the age of 20, 21, they can't trap the ball, the decision making is bad, and many other things. So I think that's the first element that we are missing. And I think to talk to that, besides the issue of clubs, we messed up by killing the school system. I mean, I'm from a rural area, but I know the school system where I'm from was very strong. We knew as kids, as early as 8, as early as 9, that at under 8, at under 9, under 10, moving, you know, up with the older you get, you'll be graduating to different age groups. We knew that we're competing with the local schools, maybe 4 surrounding schools, and that was the basics for scouts, to be able to scout these kids. But these days, you can't even have that system because it's been destroyed. But on paper, you hear people saying, no, schools, soccer is coming back. But until today, we don't see it.
Yeah, we still don't see it.
When we went to the class of 96, well, we didn't have development. But the likes of Dr. Kumalo, Lucas Khateb, and all of them, they came through that system of the school system, the school's football system. That's how they were scouted. So that's the other element which we are missing. Now, because we don't have enough academies, if we had that system, it would be, you know, in a way, assisting to fight the issue of broadening the pool. I mean, he's speaking about tax. I know they set up a tax because I've been privy to know some of the players that have been involved in that setup. You know, they would even tell you how things are well run there. It's a professional club in terms of development. It's one of the best with the legal resources that they have. And you see, in the PSL, that's why you don't even see young players playing regularly in the PSL
at
a very young age, because they've turned the league into a business sort of setup. So it's a result orientated. They would buy the big stars, and they won't develop enough players. And development takes time. You don't just it takes more than 10 years. It takes more than 15 years in some instances. So we need to take time and go back to those basics. I was watching Japan now. I was speaking to Coach Farouk, who was telling me that around 1992, Japan had started a project in Brazil where they took their players to Brazil to be developed. And if you looked at Japan now, I don't know how many years it's been now, but Japan, you can see, is a force. So all these things take time. I mean, our rugby, they do this thing. You know, rugby, if most rugby players, they go through a certain system from when they were in school,
system, yeah.
through, mm. you know, right through until they make it to Springboks. So I think that's something we need to do. And the Springboks have done it so many times that you would think that our football would then take a lesson from that. But till today, we're doing the same thing, you know, we're doing the same things over and over. We're not willing to learn. We're not willing to evolve and be modern. And we're still going to suffer because of that.
You know, Prince, like, I'm happy you mentioned that because, you know, if we, in my opinion, I think there's a lack of accountability. And I think if you look at, you know, the blame, yes, we can blame SAFA. I think the biggest problem in South African football, there's so much finger pointing. You know, we point in the finger. It's not my fault. It's his fault. It's that person's fault. But I think it's quite an easy system in which you could sort of, like, for example, with regards to the school sport, you know, you don't actually need that much more money to be spent because there's so much money in our top league. So if we look at it now, look at, there's 32 professional teams. They each get a grant. Okay. You put in that grant, you know, a rule that X amount has to be spent on the community around you. So for example, you know, we've already got it. We have a team from the Northern Cape. Those teams would all pyramid up to the professional team in their region. The professional team in the region is Hungry Lions. So Hungry Lions have a duty, and they have to be accountable for that money that they are given, that they can't just spend it on salaries and nice hotels and this and that and fat salaries for CEOs.
That's another element.
But there is a sense of accountability where each region in South Africa has an LFA. You go to the LFA and you say, okay, we want to see the best players at this level, this age group, that age group, and all the way up to senior football. And then for me, you know, you look at your better provinces like your Gautengs, your Western Capes, you know, there's teams there that can spend a little bit more money than these smaller teams that I'm talking about. And you can put programs in place where the school program can come back. Amateur football, when I grew up, I played amateur football from the age of 5 at a club where we had to pay to play. And you find that league now, those players pay to play, they finish at the age of 16, or if they don't finish at the age of 16, by 13 they go to a rugby school and they play rugby, because rugby has a proper system.
True.
So there's definitely ways and mechanisms in which we can engage our local community without spending that much more money, because the league gives the club so much money to run themselves. I think we're one of the only leagues in the world where you get a grant to carry on, you know, operating. I don't know. You can correct me if I'm wrong there, Prince, but we get given money to operate, to pay salaries from the league.
No, 100%.
Those other teams have to generate their own money, marketing strategies, buying and selling of players.
Ticket sales.
We get money from, and if I'm not mistaken, it's mainly DSTV, are pumping the monies into these teams for them to run. You know, there needs to be accountability as to why some of that money, even if it's just 10% of that monthly income, can go a long way in these communities. And you're right, Prince, you can't pick a player up at 13. Because when you go play, you pick a team of 13-year-olds here and go play against Ajax under 13s, you'll get absolutely murdered. You'll get murdered. Because they're tactically and technically far superior because they've been taught it from a young age. And unfortunately, in these rural areas, in these communities that are untouched, the players aren't getting the right opportunities. And it's frustrating for me to see.
No, that's true. I think, and then the result at the end of the day is you see our under 17 national team, our under 20 national team. Cool, they are competing. Yes, they are getting to these tournaments. They get into AFCONs. They get into the World Cups. But they're just there to compete. They don't. They never go further than just competing. You know, the group stages. Yeah. I think I don't know when was the last time we got out of a under 20 World Cup group stage. You know, we make it to the World Cup, but then what happens thereafter? You know, I think there's also no review of our performances. You know, we don't actually review and say, okay, this tournament, we got to the group stages. This is what we did. Let's try and aim for the next tournament that we do qualify for. Let's try to do something different. You know what I mean? If you look at our Olympics team, 2016, we conceded, I think, 2 goals. And then we drew two games and we lost 1 game, 2 points. This time we went backwards. We lost all 3 games and we conceded so many goals. We're not progressing as a country. You know what I mean? In 2000, we made it to the Olympics. Benny and them, and they played against Brazil, and then they won. You know, Stanton Fredericks and all those people that were in the squad, Nomvet and so on. That was a great crop of players, but did we not try and progress our football from there? But now we make it again to such a tournament, which is very hard to make it, first and foremost. You know, you have to be top three in Africa to make it at under 23. We make it, but then we don't show that level or that mentality or that quality to take us to the quarterfinal.
Prince, I'm sure we'll touch on it, but I told you, there were a lot of politics in that group. Going there, preparation-wise, arriving there, in fighting within the camp between technical members. Prince, you can have the floor here.
So touch on our Olympic performance there.
It was such a, you know, leading up to the tournament, let's start there. There was such a lot of things that were happening with different players. Some players having to pull out through injuries. Some players, their club refusing to release them. Yeah. Some players, they were in camp, and then in the last minute, we're told that 5 players have been released. One player, owing to COVID-19, testing positive for COVID-19. And then the other 4 players, cases of ill discipline and everything. So just when the coach thought he was through with everything, then he had, the 5 players had to pull out days before he had to fly to Tokyo. And, you know, this included the likes of Sipombule, Fakraki, you know, Light Foster, and some of the guys, which were a core part of his team, you know, yeah, that he had been planning around for the longest of times. Shabi has accepted that the likes of Giflings, Pepe Los Tole, and other players couldn't make it to camp, but now was building up to that. And then he was dealt that blow. And then the coach decided to pick defenders alone, which were all, you know, shocked that out. There were 5 players that were withdrawn. There were strikers.
Well,
they were different, you know, but he decided to pick 3 defenders, which was the first, psychologically for all of us, was the first problem to say, how do you then go to the Olympics with literally 4 attackers? And you have to play, you know, the group stages, 3 games, and then if you advance, how are you going to play, you know, that type of system, which was one, you know, a big problem. And we went to the Olympics. When was there 2 players, Matlatsi and Monyane, tested positive for COVID. So one is an attacker, and then the other one is more of a right back and a winger, which was another problem. This is now, I think, 3 days before the match. And meaning that those players are out for at least 14 days because they have to quarantine 14 days or 10 days. Going into the camp, we hear that, you know, there's disagreements within the technical committee. We played Japan. Yo, we were horrible. Their performance against Japan was horrible. We just went to defend. We sat back and we considered that one goal when we just played for a point. The Japan performance was very bad. I won't even lie to you. It was very disappointing. Didn't encourage us because the players that were attacking, Kobamelo Kodisang was sitting in the bench on that game, was only brought on later. I think the other problem with South Africa is that we go to tournaments, especially youth tournaments, let the young players enjoy themselves, let the young players express themselves. And, you know, it's a youth tournament. I don't think we've got much to lose, especially considering our history that we've never made it out of the group stage and all of those things. We've got nothing to lose. At the worst case scenario, we'll go out like this, that, like the way we went. But let's go play some entertaining.
Let's
go show what the world, what South African football is about. Let's play some entertaining football, enterprising football. That shows our identity, you know. Now, we went against Japan and we're defending. We played horribly. We just defended. That's why the men of the matches, in our analysis, were defenders. You know, it was Malepe and Flios and so forth. Our midfield and our attack was nowhere to be found. Against France, we played so well.
Yeah.
We played so well. I mean, the boys played so well the way that we wanted them to play. But we're bad in defending. And then the tactics of the coach as well were questionable because he withdrew the likes of Mukwena, Kobamelo Kodisang, which were part of the, you know, the players who performed the best on the day. And yeah, we ended up losing to France 4-3 after leading three times. I just think it was just tactics from the technical team that cost us the game, and bad defending, obviously. But the boys applied themselves very well. And then the last game, we played properly. We were meeting Mexico pound for pound until we conceded. And yeah, it was more or less the same as France in terms of the intent, in terms of the performance, but we just made mistakes that cost us the game and we're out. I think the biggest problem with us in the previous tournaments is that we've went to tournaments, but the players who played in those tournaments disappear after the tournament, which I'm hoping now it's not going to be the case, considering that the new coach of Bafana Bafana said he wants to go young, wants to rebuild this Olympic team, the COSAFA team, and some of the guys who are part of the Bafana Bafana team who are still within the right age. That should be the Bafana Bafana. That's my main concern at the moment. I mean, I know that I would have never came and said we're going to win gold. We're going to win silver. I expected us to make it out of the group stage, but it didn't happen. But you can see that as much as we had weaknesses in the Olympics, there are some players who are older or were not in this camp that can then come in and patch those gaps where we're weak. But overall, I hope that this Olympic team majority are taken to Bafana Bafana and we build with the COSAFA team. And some of the guys like Pesita who are still within the age. And yeah, we move forward. And we've qualified for every tournament now. I think moving forward, if we qualify, we must go there to compete. Must not go there to make numbers. We're not scared of anybody at the end of the day. We mustn't be scared of anybody. So I think the problem is with the coaches, it's not with the players. That's my opinion, because I think the players are told how to play when they get into the game. For example, Luther Singh, he was very bad. He was not that bad, but he had a bad tournament. The system didn't fit him because, in a sense of, especially in the first game, we were defending. He's not the type of player that's like, he's an attack-minded player. So some of the tactics that I applied did not fit some of the players, and that's why we didn't do so well. I'm saying it's more or less the tactical part in terms of our coaches and the technical team. And everything else involved, man, the politics, as you said, staff fighting amongst themselves and all these other things. But
I think, you know, we briefly spoke about it. I think, Nick, some of the players don't play regularly in the PSL, right? So for instance, we've got the guys who are playing overseas, you know what I mean? But then there's the guys who are playing in the PSL who didn't even play regularly. So I think Nick mentioned that Fleurs, for instance, he's not a starter for SuperSport, you know what I mean? And he's I'm not saying that he's not a good quality player, but I'm saying that our PSL teams are not entrusting the guys who are under the age of 23 to be starters, you know what I mean? At Chiefs, Ngobo was only a starter because of the ban, if we were being honest. You know what I mean? The ban has resulted in Chiefs putting trust in a Blom, in a Mashiani, in a Ngobo. Cool. Frostley at least had already come from and already started a bit when he joined Chiefs. But some of these players were enforced to play at Chiefs and so on. But then, you know, I think we need to have players in our PSL. You know, I think a person like Mbule and Mokwena, you've seen them. They've been playing in the PSL for quite a number of years. You know, a few years. You know, whereas the other players are not getting the opportunities that are needed in the PSL. You know, we are giving opportunities to players, regular opportunities at the age of 23, 24. Whereas we should be giving regular opportunities at the age of 18, 19, 20. You know what I mean? Kodisang started at the age of 15. You know, Platinum Stars gave him his debut 15 years old. And then you can see that boy was I love the way he played against France. He was just so amazing. And even the game against Japan when he came on, he had some energy about him. You know what I mean? And you can see that this player has been playing at a high level for a long time. You know, he's not afraid, and I think our players just need to be given the opportunities. But the problem is, and I think you know, as we said, is that it's a results based business. You know what I mean? And you are forced to have results. If you don't perform, you're gonna be fired. In the PSL, you know, clubs just fire quickly. No clubs are given. no coaches are given time to build their foundation of the team and bring up the young players. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. 100%. I agree with you, and I've said it for so many years. That's the biggest problem in South Africa, is that PSL teams. Some teams, you know, they are grooming players, but the same players are not giving opportunities when they are young. When you go to youth tournaments, if you look at that Mexico team, all of them are regulars. In fact, they are stars where they come from in the domestic league. They are stars. They are not just starters, players who are part of the squad, but they are stars and they are so young. And you could see the difference in quality because, you see, when South African players, I always say South African players are some of the most gifted players in the world. But if a South African player is not confident that I'm a good player, I'm better, you could see the likes of Thabo Chele, the way he was playing, he was arrogant on the ball because he's used to, you know, playing regularly with this type
at
of player.
At that level.
Of anybody. At that, you know, at a high level in the end, he believes in himself. He believes that I'm better. You could see that when he gets the ball, he was able to shield the ball, was able to do this and that and that and that. Mukwena was doing the same thing, you know, because he's used to playing at that level for a very long time. You know, at the age of 23, 24, these are seniors. You know, these are no longer now junior players. So the issue of playing young players, you know, at a very young age, it's still a very big issue that in South Africa we are going to face. Because in the past, we used to take MTC players that we take to the World Cup, and then they only take 4 years later that you see them making a first appearance for their clubs. And that is a big, big, big problem.
But I think if we also want to compete on the higher level in terms of international football, I think I touched on this last week, Selo, is where I think SAFA need to do a bit more, and I would probably look at the fact that SAFA probably don't have money to do this, but if you look at what Belgium and Germany did, and they both had phases, I think, over 12 years where they groomed their youth right up to a generation where they ended up competing and they did really well. Germany ended up winning the World Cup. You have obviously Belgium with their generation seeing its way out now, but they saw the fruits of that working from the age of, I think, 12 years old. The boys were really groomed to an extent where they would have a pool of players, and that pool of players would get together every so often, once a month, call it twice a month, and they would come to camp, for example. And what I think helps those boys is they are playing regularly against other youth teams within Europe, and they're competing against the same quality, if not better. And when you're playing at that level, and you're speaking about that player now, Prince, where he had that arrogance, you know, because he's playing at that level in Europe now, you know, he's got that ability, he's got that understanding. We need to look at getting our camps and exposing these boys to what's out there in the world, not against Lesotho, Swaziland, and Zimbabwe, because that's only going to get us so far. We'll qualify for a CASAFA, win a CASAFA, qualify for an AFCON every odd year. You know, we need to get these boys playing against the best of the best, you know, and SAFA need to pull their weight in that sense, because, you know, we're going to, the same thing is going to happen. You know, we're going to get to a World Cup. We're not going to get out the group. And then we might not see another World Cup for the next 2, 3, 4 years. You know, I think we need to expose the players a little bit more, and then, yes, together with their professional teams, actually taking a chance. You know, the last team to actually do it properly was Ajax Cape Town when they were in the PSL. You know, they weren't afraid. They used to play the youngsters. They used to have 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds in their starting lineup regularly, and quite a few. But what teams are going to do it now? I don't see many.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just in the previous in the other season, IS Cape Town are still doing it. I mean, before they changed the partnership with Amsterdam, you know, broke. Yeah. And you know, one of the problems in South Africa, you'll have a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, very talented, but because he's still young, at the age of 16, they will still say, "No, you're not ready." And the boy will only get his breakthrough when he's 22. And now, which meaning that, you know, in Brazil, there's something they do. We know that the likes of Neymar and so forth, they've been playing first team football since they were 15 because they were that good. Now, we do have the same type of players in South Africa, but they are not given the chance because they are still young. They are not ready yet. Then you find that, that's why you find, you say, you find a player that's so good and everyone is raving about. And he disappears and reappears 3 years later and everyone is asking, what happened to that kid? Mm. And now when you see that kid, you see him at the age of 22, but he's average because he's now missed that 4 years of development where he should have been playing regular first team football and developing further. So meaning that his development has been delayed. That's why in South Africa, that's the biggest problem in terms of our youngsters actually progressing the way that they should. A youngster is so talented, but he's going to be kept at the MTC for 5 years playing against the same young boys, the same, and he's not going to grow. And it's going to take another 5 years for him to restart again when he's 22 now and he's coming to the PSL as an average player now because he missed 5 years of development.
And the DDC or MDC or whatever you want to call it is quite a blur in terms of what it actually is. You know, it's got the glitz and the glam of being on TV, but it doesn't teach the boys the true, necessity of playing for a team that actually is results driven. Because if you don't win the DDC or MDC, the new DDC, there's no repercussions. Coaches don't get hired and fired. You can't get relegated. So there's no pressure of losing. You can lose every game and you'll still be there. It's only based on your first team getting relegated. So there's core fundamental values that a professional team has within sort of the pressures of the day-to-day living in a football, in a professional football team that's not experienced with a DDC player. So, it is for me, it's sort of, painting over the cracks, and it's not actually fixing the problem.
No, what I was speaking to one boy who was very young and playing in overseas, South African, Daniel Jordan. I'm not sure if you've heard about him. I think now he's with Ajax. Yeah. Ajax is under 17. He was telling me that the setup there is that when you are 8, you are 7. You know that. Ajax, if you are playing for Ajax, you know that Ajax under 7 are going to be playing against PSV under 7. And when you are at that age group, already you are thinking, hey, these are my rivals. I have to beat these guys. So on match day, you are going to a derby. As a 7-year-old, you're groomed to compete at that level because you're going to a derby. You're breaking rights and everything. And you grow from under 7, under 9, under 12. And this is the same feeling, but it's just getting better and better and better because of the competition. 100%. Now, by the time you are at under 16, you are mentally, you are so strong. Mentally, you are a winner. Mentally, you are. So the kids might have fun, but they know what they are playing for. And that's something that we are not doing. We're just playing for fun. That's why we encourage our kids to showboat and do spy too, and we laugh, and then they don't progress in terms of their development. You know? So these are some of the things that we need to tackle. And, unfortunately, no one is talking about them because even in our leagues, our teams are just results driven. They're only talking about buying players amongst themselves. That players have been there since I was a child. They're still playing PSL now. And, this team still expects the same players to deliver results. And you find that player is now 35 and is closing space for a player who's 20, 21. That should be having a breakthrough season. We really need to look into it. We can have this conversation, for the whole day. But in terms of the national team, I'm hopeful, though. I'm hopeful. And I think what we saw at the Olympics was not the best that South Africa has to offer. I think all of us have to agree in terms of that because most players were not there. But I think if we then have the players that are not at the Olympics brought together with some of the outstanding performers from the Olympics and the COSAFA team and some of the few guys, Pesita, Lebohang Piri, who are 94, 95, we'll have a good Bafana. I believe we'll qualify for the World Cup, by the way, record this, because I believe we've got so much quality. But we don't know what Hugo Bruce is going to do. That's the thing. So we'll just have to wait and see.
No, that's true. That's definitely true. I think we can definitely even just touch on into that next topic in terms of the players that are playing abroad. I think you mentioned a couple of names there already. Obviously, Lebohang Piri has moved to Turkey now. Pesitao is in his first proper preseason with Brighton. Saw rumors of Al Ahly and so on. Tabet Kele is looking for a club now. And I think you mentioned that he's going back to Portugal to obviously sort that out because he's a free agent and so on. Luther Singh has gone back to Braga. What's going to happen to him? You know, and so on. So I think, you know, can you just touch on some of these players and in terms of the update and Lechabela as well? Where are their futures lying? You know, I think Sithole as well also has a couple of opportunities.
It's silly season, man. You know, a lot is happening in terms of player movements and everything. Sphephelo, you know, we all know that was wanted by Lille, was wanted by Lorient and Strasbourg in France, but his club has decided not to release him. Well, at least, you know, transfer season, as things stand, he's not going to any of those clubs because they've not met the price that the club wants. And okay, the player and the club have agreed that he must stay. He's been going through proper pre-season. And obviously, it's going to be a regular, and I expect him to be one of the players that are going to go to Bafana Bafana. He had a brilliant season last season. Gift Links as well is back in Denmark. The league is well underway. He's been playing. He has played in all their games so far. He's a regular. You know, these two are not at the Olympics. Kanya was supposed to go to Luton Town on loan in the championship, in the English championship from Leicester. But unfortunately, the clubs couldn't agree because Luton wanted a permanent deal. Leicester said, no, we're not selling. So the player is back at Leicester, but he's looking at other opportunities. There's Blackburn in the picture. There's Bristol in the picture. I don't know. There's maybe other teams that are interested in signing him on loan. So he's looking for a loan because he can't compete with James Maddison, can't compete with Pryett. So the best way, and Youri Tielemans as well, because he can play in that role as well. So he's looking for a loan where he can play regular first team football. So I expect him to get a loan deal. I was speaking to him earlier. I expect him to get a loan deal before the end of the transfer window. Thabo Tsela, of course, is flying out tomorrow to go see where he goes, because he's got clubs in France, and Porto, obviously, as it's known in Portugal, also want to sign him. You know, but we don't know where he's going to. He's 24 now, so he needs to be start playing every week. So I think he's going to look for an offer that makes sense in that regard, as well as, you know, just regular game time at the moment. That's what he's looking for. But he's not short of suitors. So I think next week he's going to join a new club. I know that Porto are part of the teams that want him, and Nantes in France. But I don't know the other names of the other teams, but we'll see how that goes. Lyle Foster is joining West Elo in Belgium, the second division, on loan from Vitória Guimarães, who are in the top division. He's looking for first team football. His confidence is down. He needs to start scoring goals. Everyone is calling him a cow and all these things, you know. So we hope that, you know, that...
But what's wrong there, man, Ash? Because obviously he left Pirates, went to Monaco. You know, obviously he was training with Monaco. Cool. You know, they had high hopes for him. He was even in these goal top 50, 18-year-old lists and all of this stuff, you know. And then, you know, it just seems like things are not progressing upward for him, and things are going a bit backwards. And as you said, he's lost a bit of confidence in his goal scoring even.
My man, let me tell you something. You know, the level between here and Europe, let's start first by agreeing with ourselves that, you know, this thing, it's the level is different. So you can't necessarily move from not being a regular Pirates, playing maybe for MTC of Pirates, and then you move to Monaco and suddenly you are hit. The biggest players in the world have struggled to move straight to Europe. And be hits. I mean, we all know the likes of Mane struggled. Mane scored, by the way, in when he was playing for Metz, he scored one goal in two seasons. He only started doing well when he went to Salzburg in Austria, and then he went to Southampton. Yeah. So I think with Lyle, it was just a matter of he was supposed to go play for Monaco B for let's start there. But then he was fast tracked to the first team, was way behind, you know, in terms of the level where he should have been playing. And things didn't work out at all, to be fair. He went to Belgium, was played in a more deeper role, you know, as a winger and all of those, but he got the game time. And, you know, now eventually came back to Monaco, and now he's been sold to Guimarães, where he started well, and then things ended up not, you know, going so well, and he ended up not necessarily not making an impact last season. So I think the idea now is to take him, because I think he skipped a step. You sort of take him that step. He's 20 years old. To take him back to that step, give him regular first team football, give him the confidence back, get him into it, because Westerlo is known for having the great, one of the biggest good facilities in Belgium. Get him to a coach that wants him to play 70% of the games. He's going to make him the main striker and all of those things. And I think the potential that all of us have always seen in him, that's why I made the list and everything, is there, but he needs to go back a step before coming back up again. So I think this is what he's doing, and this is what makes him happy. This is what he wants to do, and he's happy. He's 100% happy. He's looking forward to the experience.
That's good.
He absolutely loves him. The coach has told him that he's guaranteed game time. He's going to be the main striker and everything. So, which has given him confidence that he's going to go and have a good season. No pressure. You know, even if he doesn't make Bafana, I don't think that's an issue. But luckily, Hugo Proust knows Westerlo because he's from Belgium. So if the player is doing well, then he will understand how we, because he will be in touch with all the players, you know, so he would know when to bring him in and when not to bring him in. Yeah. So let's let that process happen and let's see how it goes. But the player is happy.
Yeah,
he's happy. With Luther, there's a club called Poznan in Poland. They want him badly. Then there's Boavista, who also want him on loan. Boavista plays in Portugal in the top division. And then there's also a championship team, an unnamed championship team that wants to sign him.
Tell us the name, man.
I don't know.
You don't know?
Oh, you're told unnamed.
I'm saying unknown. But that's the information that I have, that there's a championship team that wants him. And I said that would be the best option.
That's a good level.
It makes sense. And it's a brilliant level. If you're 24, you have a good 2 years then, and you're in the Premier League. So yes, there's those options for him. So we'll see how it goes. I believe Luther's got a lot of potential. We've seen Luther from under 20. We've seen Luther in club level. And I don't understand why suddenly, because Luther had a bad tournament at the Olympics, suddenly a bad player. This is the same player who qualified us for under 20, was our main star, top goal scorer and so forth. Mbappe didn't score a goal in the Euros. Is he suddenly a bad player? No.
100%,
So I think, you know, with Luther, that's the situation. And,
how's the boys doing in Sweden? The boys in Sweden.
Hey, our group there, they're doing well. They're doing well.
That Varga boys, eh?
Yeah, Varga. So,
because we've got three players there now, ne?
Four.
On the same team,
Vince
four
Solomons,
now.
Tashrik Matthews, Ryan Moon, Luke Luru. Those are the four players.
It's actually Kotzen's connection there, the forward zone boys.
Who?
Forward zone. You know Ashley Kotzen, the agent.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering, man. Because I could tell. No, man. There's a South African connection there.
There's an agent. Man, always, when you see that many guys there, you always know it's like one agent offering.
Exactly. Exactly. No, the boys are doing well, man. It's only Dean Solomon that's not playing. Oh, there's five. There's Kian Inaye. How can I forget Kian Inaye?
Yeah, Kian
Inaye,
yeah.
Kian Inaye is there. You know, there's five. Yeah, Kian Inaye is there. Kian Inaye
is there. He was playing last season quite a bit.
Yeah, he's been playing throughout. He helped them get promoted. He's a regular, you know. Out of 30 games, Kian Inaye probably plays 29 a season. Except for this season, he's not played because he's been injured. So he's back today. He's playing today. Quality player, by the way. I believe he's the best right back in South Africa. He's way better than Rim Frostler. He's way better than any of our right backs. But you know, in South Africa, when you play outside of, in Europe, you are only noticed when you make these serious headlines, you know, and because we don't have a proper scouting system. But I believe Ken Inaye is eventually going to be our best right back.
Prince, can I tell you a funny story about him? I watched him in the last tournament he played for Right to Dream. I was in Sweden at the time.
Oh, the
Tufts actually went to the same Gothia Cup.
The Gothia Cup, yeah.
Yeah, and they won their section. They played in the elite section because Right to Dream always won that. He was playing as a right winger then in that tournament.
And he was also playing as a holding midfielder.
So I don't even know him as a right back. So that was news to me.
Yeah, so what happened is he was converted when he got there. He was playing as a central midfielder. And then in the season where they got promoted, both of their right backs got injured. And basically the coach said, hey, someone has to step up. And then he said, "No, coach, hey, I will play there because I want minutes. You know, that was
because you want to play.
I want minutes until they come back." Hey, it turned out to be the best right back. Even when the two players came back, they're sitting in the bench now. He's been the first choice right back since, and he's converted basically. And my advice was to him that if you want to play in the national team, stick to the right back position because central midfield, my man.
It's packed.
You know, and he stuck to his guns. He's doing so well. Luke Luru, I mean, he's a regular there. He's their best central midfielder, defensive midfielder. Ryan Moon has gotten there and he's been scoring some important goals for them. Tashrik Matthews is having the season of his life. He scored 4 goals and assisted another 3 goals in 12 games. And, you know, there's some team in Denmark that wants him. And a few teams in Sweden, some of the big clubs, your Malmo, AIK, Hammarby, you know, they want him. So, yeah, it's looking good. I'm just hoping that Dean Solomons start playing at center back and all of them will be regulars.
That's good.
Tell me about the Cardiff boy. How's he recovering? Because
Nick saw the injury happen.
I was there.
Oh, really? Oh, you were there. Hey, man. I was so angry, bro.
I also just don't... For me, I don't understand what happened there. I don't know why he came to train with us. I don't know if David Matswana had
to... He referred him there.
He referred him, and then... It was 10 minutes, eh? 10 minutes. He went in. It was a clean challenge. But he knew straight away his leg was gone. And we could see the physio ran on and he's like, "Hey, this guy needs to get to the hospital soon." I think he was in the country for 2 or 3 days. I looked at your tweets. You had met him at the airport, I think.
Yeah, I met him at the airport. I was with him throughout his injury, you know, until he left, you know. I think after the injury, he stayed a good 2 weeks. 2 weeks, yeah. I think he stayed a good 2 weeks. I was visiting him at his home every other 4 days, I think. He's a strong boy. That's one thing I can say. He's a strong boy mentally. It never affected him, to be fair. Yeah. It's part of the game. These things happened. He even forgave the boy that, you know, kicked him. They met. They told him that, "No, man, don't worry about it. It's part of the game. These things happened. Yeah. I'll come back stronger," and so forth. And, yeah, indeed, the boy is now running. He just has to go remove some spring or something there that was connecting the bones, and then that's the last process, and then he's going to come back, you know, into full recovery. And
what did Cardiff say? By...
Come again?
What did Cardiff say? Were they upset?
Yo, man, I can tell you something. The family, even now, the family was upset. Cardiff was upset. Interesting that they were saying they don't see the boy coming back to play for South Africa again because of the treatment that they got from, because of the way things were handled. Because even after the boy had been injured, there was no one from the association who made an effort to be there.
Really?
Remember? Yeah. I think the only center physio a week before the boy left.
Because I also think our technical team, I know our head coach went to visit him in hospital. I think a few staff members from Tux came to...
Yeah, the coach arrived when the boy was in. You see, on the day he got injured, the coach arrived to come see him. But because the boy was inside the ward, he couldn't see him. And that's the last time that the coach pulled through. So the coach has never met the boy, basically.
Yes.
Yeah,
but that's
never
disappointing,
met the boy.
Though, from the association, eh?
It's very disappointing, especially considering a case like this. Remember, the player had flown himself to South Africa. Let's start there. Flew himself here. He sorted out his own paperwork, financially in any other way you can think of, sorted out his own paperwork, which showed a lot of commitment.
Yeah.
Top of that, the boy was keeping fit with his own personal trainer and then was referred to go to Tux. 10 minutes into
the
game.
By the head coach of the Olympic.
Yes. Now when the boy is here, he breaks his leg. 10 minutes into the game, as if, you know, the way it happened, it was like you felt like, hey, there's some foul play here, you know? Mm. How can, I was then made to understand that it was boys who were trialing, but how do you play a national team player with people who are trialing? Mm. You know? And the boy broke his leg, and then 100,000 for the surgery.
Yes.
On top of that, now, when the 100,000 has to be found, no one is willing to come to the table. Cardiff has to be called and say, Cardiff, hey, that insurance issue. Cardiff has to then pay the 100,000 for the surgery. It's 100,000 upfront, it's 100,000 or there's no surgery, basically.
Yeah.
So the mom is the one doing this thing, running around and arranging these things alone, you know. She's the one who organized for the boy to come here via the flights and everything. She's the one who's been running, you know. Now she has to organize the surgery. Eventually, I think he was injured on a Tuesday and eventually was operated on a Friday. So those days, he was still not operated. He was operated on a Friday because there were processes with the insurance and all of those things. Now he was operated on Friday and his leg was swollen as well. So the doctors advised that let's wait for the leg to be swollen. And then there were process of claims and all of those things. Then he was operated on Friday. And then he went home. His family was the one taking care of him and everything. So, hey, man, it was quite a sad story. I felt bad because I'm practically the one who convinced the player to come play for South Africa. I'm the one who was involved in this whole process. I'm the one who was close to the family and everything, you know? Now, when these things happened, you know, to all the players, by the way, to all the players, I'm very close to them. I'm close to their stories, their families and everything. So, when these things happen, you are sort of also affected because you are just like the way our association does things, man, you know? Till today, I don't know if there's been any contact, consistent contact to check if the player is fine, what is happening.
Could you check people up on him,
moved on with their lives, I guess, you know?
So that's Cardiff, what happened with the players. And Cardiff are fine now? Or are they happy to have
Cardiff
him back?
Are fine. They just let it go. They let it go, and they're focusing on rehab, making sure that the player recovers in time and is back on the field, and the rest will follow. They gave him a 2-year deal. He signed a 2-year deal, which is brilliant, and he wants to make his first team debut before the end of the season. So he's back running. He's put it behind him, basically. And we'll just, that boy is probably going to be the best striker that's going to come out of this country in the next few years.
Yeah.
By far, you know, in my opinion. So, if we don't appreciate such talents, and then when Khaogelo Chauke, you know, there's issues, when there's wrong headlines that are flying around that he refused
to
play for South Africa, he chose England and so forth, and we'll treat these boys as if they are foreigners, they are not appreciated, but they are one of us.
Yeah.
You know? If you could see
They're representing us overseas.
Very true. Not true. I see Pumlani asked a question here. Do you think it would make sense for some of our players to play in like a League One in the UK? Obviously, I think the Championship is obviously is good, but the one below that, the League One, below the Championship, do you think it would be, I'm not saying obviously like the older guys, but the younger ones, the ones who are
the younger ones. You remember those, the younger ones. I would say if you are between the ages of 16 and 21, League One is good. If you are, you know, below 20, League Two is still good. Remember, that side is not about, it's more or less, it's more, you find a League One team bigger than a Premier League club.
Yeah,
in terms of the institution, you know, and I think that's something we don't get. We judge how big a club is by how many trophies they have, which level they play in. You find a Charlton Athletic, you'll find a Blackburn Rovers, Bolton and all Portsmouth. They are now in the fourth division and the third, and some of them are in the third division and some are in the second division. But these are clubs that we grew up knowing that they're in the Premier League. But the way that they are run better than some Premier League clubs. So if you are part of such an institution, then and you are a youngster like that, you can move from any club to Liverpool. You can move from League One to Liverpool, League Two to Manchester United, because it's an institution. They don't necessarily look at the level where you play, but they look necessarily at the quality and the institution that you are part of and where you are developed and all that. So if their age is right, I'd say if you are 25 and below, Championship is a good level as well. Even at 26, Championship is a brilliant level, because even money-wise, you are getting paid a lot of money, you know? And those are good levels. Those are good levels and for our players. And, you know, with these rules being eased, our players must start moving to those leagues.
No, true. No, definitely true. I think that's definitely. I know. I've seen a couple of your tweets, and I've agreed with a couple of them in terms of, you know, our football supporters like to call certain leagues farmers leagues. You know what I mean? Whereas these are the gateways in terms of the league to get into top five leagues. Whether you are playing in a lower division in England, whether you're playing in Belgium, whether you're playing in Austria, whether you're playing in Sweden, Denmark, you know what I mean? This is how you should utilize these clubs to get to the Premier League, because your Sadio Manes went through the same type of path. You know, your Patson Dakas have gone through that path. You know, I look back at some other stats where Patson Daka and Luther Singh were playing in the same under 20 AFCON, and they were the top goal scorers with 4 goals each. Patson Daka's playing for Leicester City, and Luther Singh right now is still in Portugal. You know what I mean? So those players were on the same level at a certain point, and now one has just gone above the other. And I think we definitely need to change our mindset in terms of how we view European clubs and how our players can get into European setups.
Prince, have you heard from Bradley Cross?
He's in Newcastle. He's stable. Yeah. His table is really, I haven't spoken to him in a while. I think in close to 3 weeks now, I haven't spoken to him. But he's a Newcastle player. He's back that side. Should be with the under 23s, and is going to continue his development. And I expect him to make his Premier League debut this season.
Yeah, okay,
that's good.
At some point
this
season, I expect to.
You see who I support. I've coached a lot of games against him, because he came through at the same youth leagues at Black Aces and Wits, and I played against him a few times. He's always a standout player, and I think having the passport also helped him to go across. And I think, you know, he had a great first season, you know, where he captained the side for I think 70% of the games.
And his experience, by the way, in Germany was very important, because Schalke is a big institution, and he was playing regularly. You know, I expected him to stay at Schalke. That's what I was expecting, but it didn't happen, you know, that way. And he's at Newcastle now. He played almost all the games there. He was a leader. Yeah. He was an ever present, playing in different roles, by the way. He played at left back, center back, and at some point they played him as a six. So he was, that's his other strength, that he can is versatile, and is very rare, because he's a left-footed centre-back, and we lack those in the world, not only in South Africa but in the world. Those are very precious. World, so I expect him to really step up there, and I think now that he's going to his second season, he's going to do even better, you know, than he did last season in his first season. I was surprised he was not part of the Olympic team, but hey, anyway, the selection in South Africa is very questionable. Sometimes you just pretend you are like, you know what?
Political.
Sometimes that's why we don't make it out of this, you know, group stage, because people just want to expose their players. There's this and that, you know. You are not focusing on the game to say, on merit, which player is supposed to be there. And that's how we should select. That's how the best nations in the world select.
Maybe someone's eating. I'm just saying.
No, people are eating. Yeah, maybe, but you don't know. But I'm just saying, these are some of the things that the leadership really, really needs to look into and just say, you know what, we're tired of being bystanders at tournaments. We're tired of just adding numbers. We heard the president saying, we qualified for under, in 2015, qualified for under 17. Yeah, we've qualified for everything, president, but then what?
We need to win.
Now, this is we've been knocked out at the group stage in all these tournaments that we are proudly saying we qualified for. And if you look at the players from 2015, how many are in Bafana Bafana right now? One or two. Yeah. Then you can't be proudly saying, you know, those things. And now that the team has come back from the Olympics, he's been saying, no, this is the Vision 2022 team. Let the team then go to Bafana Bafana, and let's move forward. I'm tired of just going to tournaments and just being knocked out with 1 point or 0 points. And, you know, scouts go there to watch our players. And when we give such performances, they even discourage scouts from coming to scout at institutions that are so good, like TACS and so many other institutions.
Yeah.
Because they think this is the best South Africa has to offer.
That's true.
And speaking about our fans, my brother, I encounter this every day on social media. Some guy earlier on this season was saying, Koba Meloko Disang is wasting his talent in Portugal. Yeah. Why is he playing for Braga's B team? Da, 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 da. And I explained to him that he's playing senior football. As much as playing for Braga B, but he's playing in the third division where senior teams are playing. And after this season, I was saying, he scored 10 goals, by the way, last season. after this season, Kobamelo is going to be playing first team football, and Kobamelo is only turning 22 this year. Only 22 this year, and he's going to be playing Premier League football, and he's going to be way ahead of his peers. And if you look at his performances at Tokyo, come on,
our best player,
most of the wingers we have. You know, so these are some of the things we need to change as South Africans to think that our league number one is the best league in the world. And you even hear some of the oldest people when they speak, Ochemen and many other people who are leading clubs and so forth, saying the PSL is in the top 10 in the world. No, we're not even in the top 100 in the world.
No, that's
so
true.
The sooner we realize, are we in the top 5 in Africa? That should be the question we should be asking ourselves before jumping the gun and saying we're in the top 10 in the world. So we need to first fix the competitiveness of our league. We're not disagreeing in terms of marketing, the money and everything is there, but the competitiveness within the field of play is going to determine whether we qualify for AFCON or we don't. Where you get our squad of Bafana Bafana dominated by 31-year-olds, 30-year-olds, failing to beat a Ghana team and a Sudan team and struggling to beat a Sao Tome. You know, that's the level in which we... I mean, South Tome scored 2 goals against us at some point. That's the level which we are in. And the sooner we realize that, and the sooner we're going to change things. But I believe, luckily, that, you know, we've been able to withstand the storm and ride the wave. And we've got a group of players now that are young and playing regular first-team football here and abroad. Let's just bring them together. Yeah, and then... I think we can do something.
I see. Darren has asked, what happened to Kosi Nke? He never really made it. He's at Barrow now. I think Barrow's like in the League 1 or League 2? I think in England. Yeah, League 2 in England.
Then League 2, yeah. I really don't know what happened to Kosi because it was never a matter of he's not a quality player. I think... with him, there's a lot of factors, including discipline. That's one of the factors, discipline with him. I mean, he's went to League One teams and League Two teams, League One teams. And at some point, I think I was playing in the champion. No, I think I was playing in the championship some few years ago. But he keeps on going down and down. And now, Jose is a 94, so meaning that he's 27. And if he's in League Two right now, I don't think there's any surprises there unless... you know, playing left back, and at left back, you need to be exceptional for you to move up. And if he was an exceptional left back, he would have long been up. So I think
he
maybe
the championship.
Yeah, I think he's just going to keep on moving from club to club. But because I don't see him coming back this side anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because he was mostly brought up there. He stayed there for a long sort of time. I think he's going to play at that level and until he retires. I was very disappointed. I felt in this generation that just went out, he should have been our left back because we never had a quality left back after Masilela. Because he had been playing, whichever club it went to be fair, he had played regularly 90 minutes. I felt he should have been there, but because of we lack scouting overseas and all these other things, you know, some of these guys never get a chance, you know, to play for us. I think would have been a better left back than most of the left backs we've seen over the years. But yeah, I think that's just about it for him. I don't expect anything much from him in terms of moving to the Premier League in the future and so forth. I don't even think he will make it to the championship. I think he's just going to keep on playing between League One and League Two.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah,
that's
must just make his money and retire. At least I think these clubs are paying some nice money, you know.
No, so before we end off, I think also we just need to touch on the fact that you know, the players coming back from Europe. You know, I think we've seen Keegan Dolly coming back. There was rumors of Zungu, you know, and what's happening there with in terms of Bongani Zungu. I think we can start just in terms of what do you think of players coming back at the age of 27, 28? You know, I understand someone coming back at the age of 33, 34, but when someone comes back at the age of 27, 28, when it's supposed to be their prime, like a Keegan Dolly, I think it doesn't set a great precedent. You know, you've got Andile Jali as well, who came back also even earlier, actually. Andile Jali came back even younger than that because he's 30, 31. So he came back at about 27, 26, 27 came back to the PSL. So what do you think about this trend that continues of under 30s that are Bafana players coming back to PSL, and then also touching on what's going on with Zungu.
I absolutely hate it. to be blunt with you, I hate it. I hate it. So disappointing for me. Because I mean, I don't expect Bongani Zungu to come back. I don't think Bongani Zungu is going to come back. Because number one, no PSL team at the moment can afford to pay the 50 million release clause that he has on his contract with Amiens. Zungu still has a year left on his contract with Amiens, and Amiens has made it clear that they want him back at work, must come back and work as an employee that side. If anyone wants him, they must buy him for that 50 million rand. I think that's the first point. So I don't think Zungu is going to come back. You know, social media in South Africa, they can make you really believe that things are going to happen when they are never going to happen. The people are saying Bongani Zungu are going to come back. I don't think they consider that fact, that Bongani Zungu, for you to buy Zungu, you need to have that 50 million. And I don't think any club at the moment here, I don't know about Sundowns. I don't even think Sundowns will pay 50 million for Zungu's coming back for a second homecoming, you know. Chiefs, I don't think they will pay. It's been linked to Chiefs. I don't think it's going to come back. The Espanyol move, though, is on the cards, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen. But it's been linked to Espanyol. They've been linked with him, I think, 2 years ago. Yeah. And I think they've come back. They've come back now that they're back in La Liga, and they want to sign him. Yeah, they want to sign him. So that's on the cards. But if he's not going to Espanyol, he's going to go back to France. That's the reality of Bongani Zungu. I don't think he's the player that would want to come back as well psychologically. I don't think he's that guy. He believes himself to be the best midfielder in South Africa. Yeah. So I think he wants to continue, you know, playing that side. As for Kick and Dolly, he had a very bad time in France. From injuries hampered his progress. Every time he would start to play, he would have a good preseason. Every time he would start to play, he would get injured and he'd be out for the rest of the season. He had a very bad time in France. And I think him getting married and having a child contributed to him coming back. I think that's, for me, that's a major factor that contributed to him coming back, because I think he's more looking for stability. We all knew that what Dolly was capable of, but yeah, it didn't happen in France.
Yeah.
You know, and I speak a lot with his agent as well, and they were looking for an option that would give him playing time, but also the good financial package and a place where he can raise a family and all of that. I think it was not about football necessarily for Kick and Dolly. It was more about the factors of his life, with the stage of his life where he is right now. I would have loved to see him in Europe, try it out for another 2 years, or go to the UAE, man. I mean, there's money there as well. You could do all of those other things, but you know, in South Africa, man, Kick and Dolly, they grew up supporting Kaizer Chiefs, so I think this was the ultimate dream for him to move to Chiefs. Maybe the family supported it as well because of, you know, I think the family support Kaizer Chiefs, or he supports Kaizer Chiefs. So I think that's why he came back, but I was very disappointed to hear that he came back. That's why they didn't even tell me that he was going to come back early. Like, they told me, like, on the eve of the move, that this was going to happen. Because I was very disappointed about it, but what can we say? You know, most players, by the way, who stay in the PSL beyond 23, those are the players that end up coming back to the PSL. Most players who leave as teenagers, as maybe at the age of 20, 21, the likes of Tulan Serrero, Mokoto, and so forth, they stuck it out that side because, you know, that's just the way it is. They never really, they are competitive. Like Serrero, when he came back, but he stayed in Europe. Erasmus, we know, he came back as a youngster, and then the rest is history. When we went to Europe and he said, I'm not a star, let me go back be a star. Mandla Masango once went for a season, and halfway through the season, he said, this club is small for him. He wants to move to a bigger club, and his career is nowhere to be found. So I think it's a psychological issue with our players. They're weak psychologically. They don't fight. They don't persevere. You see a Nigerian player who's 35. Still moving around in Turkey or wherever, that's the mentality they have. Our players, a totally different mentality, especially the outgoing generation, 93, 92, 91 going down. They've got I call them the spoiled bread generation, because they're the generation that took the national team back way back, because the 2009 under 20 generation, I mean, they're the ones who didn't move to Europe. They're the ones at Bafana Bafana who have been performing badly, not qualifying us for tournaments. And that's a generation I believe should be moved out. In this generation that's upcoming, the likes of Thabo Tsele, Sebolos Tolo, when you speak to Thabo Tsele, he says, "Hey, Baba, I'm not coming back even beyond 33. I'm not going to come back. I can see people linking me to Chiefs. I'm not coming back because I've got a bigger dream there." I think because we are now at a lower state as a nation, our national team, these players are hungry to take us back there and to put South Africa back on the map and to also be successful. That's what's going to make a successful generation. Other than that, the previous generation, they all took the baton from success, and they thought success is contagious, and they were, you know, they were big-headed, and yeah, the results show. We are now 70-something in the world.
No, that's true. Nick, any final thoughts on your side?
No, I think it's quite nice to hear what Prince has to say. I agree. You know, there's lots of problems within our football, and I think we need to look at the clear and obvious facts. You know, we've got some quality players out there. You know, you spoke about Nigeria, and you know, you look at Senegal, you look at all these Ivory Coast, your Egypt. You know, Egypt may be a different example because they've got a very strong sort of league and some very strong teams. But those West African nations select their national teams of players that all play in Europe. You don't see you know, ASEC Mimosa come up on their list too many times, because ASEC Mimosa in comparison is a smaller team in comparison to the rest of or where the rest of the national team players are actually playing. You know, for us, we select a national team, we maybe have four or five overseas players and the rest are in our local league. Then you actually think to compare our local league in comparison to the rest of the world, that's not very good. I think we need to get back to reading facts and seeing what's out there, and you know, selecting national teams based on quality versus quality. And the quality is if they're in Europe, they're in Europe for a reason. And we need to understand that we are number 70 something in the world, and probably the whole of the Euros teams were above us. All the teams in the Euros were above us. Mm-hmm. And you call those leagues farmers' leagues. You call Denmark a farmers' league. They got to the quarterfinal of Euros. Sweden got to a quarterfinal.
Slovakia, you know? Yeah. And they are saying the Slovakians are playing locally, majority of them. I mean, man, come on. I really, really, can we just get rid of this mentality, because it's That's killing true. Us. You find Nukovic coming from the Serbian second division and coming here and bossing it. Serino's coming from Bolivia. He's getting here and bossing it. But we still, if a player was to move to Serbian second division, you say, Farmers League. It's just doesn't make any sense.
Ignorance. Mm. Ignorance is most people.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
No, that's a problem.
And your
final thoughts, Prince?
No, I just think for the past 10 years, I've been doing this job of monitoring and profiling our players that are playing overseas and discovering them. From where I'm seated, I'm very pleased with the progress that has been made. I'm very happy with where we are. And I think we've got now the group that we've wanted for a very long time at Bafana Bafana. Hugo Bruce is an experienced coach who's been around the world, understands leagues around the world. So at least it won't be difficult now when you say a player is performing in Sweden, Denmark, and so forth, for the coach to understand the level and what it means when it comes to the national team. So I'm positive that at least now you won't find you know, coaches that are ignorant to this fact, coaches that are talking about local liquor and so forth. We'll have a coach that whether you play here or abroad, if you are good enough, you are good enough, you must be in the national team. There's no favors. We can't be giving debuts to 31-year-olds anymore. We can't be doing all these things, you know, that we've been doing that didn't make sense. International game time and minutes must be invested in the right personnel. That's where I think the direction that we should be taking. And, you know, we need to scout all players who qualify for South Africa. the world over. We've got a player in Manchester City. In the next camp, we should be having that player there. You know, he's playing for Pep Guardiola's team. And, you know, he's a center back that we need. So we need to scout all these players, bring them together with our local players. And let's have a national team that competes, man. We can't even qualify for a 24 team AFCON because of Sudan and so forth. You know, we should put those days behind us and move forward. And for me, everyone knows, I'm not really bothered about club football, but when it comes to Bafana Bafana and all national teams, that's where my heart is. And
yeah,
I'm hopeful that moving forward, we are going to shock everybody. We are going to start doing well if things are done right.
Yeah, no, that's true. No, that's definitely true. I think the most important thing is Safa needs to get his house in order. Everything, you know, I mean, I think we need to, as you say, pick every player that qualifies for South Africa. If they are in those leagues, we need to pick them before they get picked by those other countries and so on, and give them the exposure, because yeah, we need to add the quality to the squad and also get into the top 50 in the world. You know, I think that's something that we can definitely achieve in the next couple of years, to get into the top 50 in the world and then also compete in AFCON and then obviously qualify for World Cup as well. But yeah, no, Prince, thanks a lot for coming through. It's a pleasure. We'll touch base again soon. And hopefully when we touch base, we can talk about some players in bigger leagues and doing well. And some of these guys, hopefully they get the right moves for their careers.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I think, in fact, our next session should be after they announce the squad for the qualifiers in September.
I think we'll
get an idea of where the coach is taking us, and we'll check the players that are there and so forth. So,
no,
yeah,
perfect.
Thank you
that's
for having me.
That's a
thanks
deal.
A
that's
lot,
a deal. We'll definitely
all right,
do that.
All right, no. Good night, guys. Thanks, man. Nice chat.
All right. Thanks
sure,
a lot.
Sure.
Cheers.